Okay, let's start with this. I just listened to the news, and Southern California had snow.
This is true.
Talk amongst yourselves.
Did you get snow, Merce?
No, wouldn't that have been the best? You would have for sure known about it. I would have had to written letters to everybody to get this.
I know. Saturday morning, it dumped snow in Redlands for 2 hours straight. Giant, giant flakes. The first, it barely stuck, but then it did accumulate, and there was like snow on everything. But it was like a show. Like, I couldn't not look out the window. It was giant, like the size of feathers, just the biggest snowflakes for 2 hours. Snowed. It was so fun. My parents and my younger sister and her family live in the local mountains, and my younger sister, they got 5 feet of snow. Like, you know, my parents got 3 feet. They're in a little lower elevation, but it's not even fun. At this point, it's like so fun for a couple of days, and now it's kind of panicky. Like,
will we ever have peanut butter again?
Totally. I mean, my parents legit can't get their cars out. Like, they can't leave. And a lot of the streets are still not being plowed, haven't been plowed yet. And it's supposed to snow the next 3 days. It's a real mess.
When there's not the infrastructure to plow those roads, it is scary.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can really do.
I mean, in the local mountains, I grew up there and I grew up with snow. Snow is a thing that happens, and this was just an exceptional storm. And then all the flatlanders, as the mountain folks like to call us, I am now a flatlander, think like, yes, let's go to the snow. And then they take their little Tesla up, and then the next thing you know, there's like a seven car pileup, and then the plows can't get through. Every single road up to the mountain was closed, going up or down.
They say chains recommended. Like, well, they just recommended it.
I know.
I think we can do it.
So, anyways, everyone will be fine. But yes, snow in Southern California, friends, snowed in LA. It's very exciting.
I mean, like, what more can you say? Hmm.
All you and can that's say our is episode.
Enough of this.
That's it.
Bye, everybody. That was episode 199. We're kidding. Enough of this. Let's shout some worth and shift some narratives for people with Down syndrome. Today, we're going to chat about all the things we wish we knew as brand new parents with a kiddo with Down syndrome. And we're going to give you, our dear listeners, all the things we wish we knew, had, and what we tell ourselves to get through those first years. This is the perfect episode to share with any brand new parents of kids with Down syndrome. Welcome to the Lucky Few podcast. Hey friends, Micah here. When Ace was around one, I started to worry about the future. I worried about how to even know where to begin in saving for him. When you have a child with a disability, how do you even start to think about saving money for that child's entire life? It can feel overwhelming and terrifying. That's why Enable Special Needs Planning exists. They provide families with simple solutions and a unique approach to special needs planning. Find out more at enablesnp.com.
This episode is sponsored by Able Now. Able Now accounts are the result of a grassroots cross-disability advocacy effort. The idea originated with a group of parents who recognized the inequity of not being able to save money in their child's name for fear of losing essential benefits, such as Medicaid. These advocates helped to change the law so people with disabilities can achieve a better life experience. Today, Able Now accounts are available to qualified individuals in all 50 states. Learn if you or someone you know is eligible for an Able Now account at ablenow.com.
Okay, I'm going to bring us in with a review from a wonderful listener. Max02777 says, "This is everything a podcast about Down syndrome should be. Celebrating success, lamenting challenges, and honest representation of our most precious friends with Down syndrome. Thank you." Thank you. That's so wonderful. I love that wording of lamenting challenges and honest representation and celebrating successes. I feel like that is so us and what we aim to do.
Yeah. And we should get a t-shirt that says everything a podcast about Down syndrome should be.
Yes. Our new tagline.
The lucky new pod.
Thanks, Max.
The best coffee in the town. I feel like it could be very claimy. But according to Max,
I believe it.
I believe Max too. Thank you for that review. Yes.
Thank you. Okay, friends, don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. We want to hear from you.
All right. So, everybody, this is an episode about what we wish we knew, what we wish we had, what we wish we had told ourselves in the first years. And I'm excited to come back to this. These are ideas that we've discussed in different ways over the years, over the past 5 years, because y'all, we're about to celebrate our fifth anniversary.
That's right.
I can't even believe
it's a long time.
I know, it's so fun. Our babies were little. How old was Ace 5 years ago?
He was 2.5.
Like a tiny guy.
Yeah.
Was he walking?
About to turn 3. He was walking. Yeah. He had started walking just like that summer before.
Oh my gosh.
So, yeah. Yeah. What about y'all? How old were they?
And how old was Sunny? Yeah.
Sunflower was 4, gonna turn 5 that year. Because she's 9, you guys. Crazy. Gonna turn 10 this year.
Same with Augie. Augie was 4. And Macy was 9, which is so different than 14. It's sort of hard to even wrap your mind around how different a 9-year-old is from a 14-year-old. Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh.
It's a different world. We are in a different world over here in 5 years. It's been a fun 5 years. Okay, thinking back, I have to go back 14 years with Macy. And it's so interesting because 14 years ago, Facebook was around, MySpace was around, but basically social media didn't exist. And so it's a very different ball game in what do you need, what resources are available, what do you wish you had. And there's been a lot of good connection with social media, but I'm not sad about that. Because I think that social media, while there's been some good that's come of it, it's also been some dark that's come of it in terms of, for me, like comparison and feeling it's oversaturated, feeling overwhelmed. I'm more overwhelmed now with what to do than I was when I didn't have social media as a tool. There's too many choices. I just don't think our brains are do well with that. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about that. What's an item? Let's start with there. Okay. What's an item that you wish you had for yourself and something you had for your baby? Can you remember something?
Well, I mean, I was still using all my baby gear from my firstborn, who is also 14. So all I could dream of is these wild contraptions now where the car seat turns into the stroller and you never have to wake a baby up. I mean, that's just mom stuff in general, but that would have been nice.
That would have been nice. I love that. You guys, so Sunny was my first and the whole thing was a celebration. She's also adopted and a little girl and I had literally everything.
Yeah.
I had everything. It was fine. Stuff, I was fine with the stuff. So I have no wishes on that part. Lots of wishes on the other subjects we'll cover. But
yeah.
but I was good on stuff, but I wasn't lacking.
When Macy came home, we were in a season of life where we were living on a way smaller budget than we are now. And we were very budgeted. We had to be very frugal with our money. And I really wanted a tall umbrella stroller, like a McLaren, because I'm very tall and not McLarens are so short. And I couldn't buy it full price. And I couldn't even imagine asking for it. And we had like gift cards to stores, but I couldn't imagine spending $100 or $150 on a stroller when you could wait 3 to 5 months and search for it and find one used or at a yard sale or however I work. And I wish I would have got the good, expensive stroller from day one, whether it was a McLaren or the jogger or whatever. We got the cheaper jogger. We got all the cheaper things. And I would have gone back and got that one travel system or the one great stroller that would have lasted all my babies. Get the one item that would have been mine, a stroller. Yeah, funny.
One that lasts. I got a stroller without realizing how important it is to be able to control that thing with one hand.
Yes.
So I got the one that had the two hand. the two hands, and you cannot hold a coffee and push those things.
You can't.
You can't. And I learned the hard way, and ended up just. Every year I Craigslisted a different stroller and sold the other one.
Totally.
And finally got to what I wanted. It took me a decade.
I was the same. And I could have just started. Like after you've pushed the cheap jogger and then you get a bob.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, just get the bob from the beginning. You guys, you're just, absolutely. It's a game changer. And that thing is going to last you for so long. You're going to use it for years. We have a bob that we got later that someone gave us, a hand-me-down, that we still take to Disneyland, and August is 9. And it's more like throw everything in, and it's like the parts that can fall apart are, but man, that stroller has been a game changer.
Yep. And listeners, you can get those things on Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace, and that's the way to go because those things are still good.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's funny.
We've worked it all out.
Another item that I would, that if you don't have this and you're a new parent, some kind of a baby carrier, and I've used a lot of them, and I still highly and mostly recommend a Moby wrap or something equivalent, which is just like the big piece of fabric. It seems tricky, but once you figure out how to tie it around your body, you just snug that baby into your chest and you just go. And I loved carrying my babies.
Yes.
Oh, if someone wants to bring me a baby in their carrier right now, I will just all day.
Don't you just have
wear that baby around?
Can't you just feel it right now? Oh,
yes.
Just feel it. Oh, so you know what else I would say, and some things came as we had therapists in our home, but one of the things that was most helpful for Ace, and I think is helpful for a lot of kids with Down syndrome because of the low muscle tone, our physical therapist had us get those little sewn together shorts, bike shorts. Do you guys know? I don't know what those are called.
Yes.
I'm going to look it up.
I don't remember either. I remember we used them at ICEC. But yeah, you can even make your own. You essentially just get...
Or bike shorts.
What's it called? Like leggings? Kind of type shorts. Yeah. Or if you can't find leggings, then get pants and cut them where you need to be. And then you sew the crotch part.
And that was like... I mean, once we had that and I could... put it on Ace for his tummy time every day. It felt like such a, I don't know, like a life hack. I was like, oh, this is doing all kinds of work for him right now. And I'm not doing anything. I'm doing the dishes.
Hip helpers.
Hip helpers. Yeah.
For our little babies. Those were something that no one ever told me about those. And I don't even know. I don't even know if Macy, I'm sure everyone would have benefited, but I didn't know about him.
I did want to piggyback off of you, Heather, because we talked about strollers. I'm going to feel like a real, what's that movie where it's like, I would never push my baby away when I was talking about.
Oh my gosh, hilarious. Yes.
I'm going to sound like that right now. And I love a good stroller. Okay. So our babies with Down syndrome have little muscle tone, stuffer heads, and they're in their strollers and stuff a lot longer. So I just highly encourage, so what Heather was saying, baby wearing more often than not, like having them nap on you. Also, that upright position helps with breathing and everything. So I would essentially say both are very important, and it will be so tempting, but I'm so happy I did this. Was always, even when Sunny was such a good baby and good sleeper, even when she was sleeping, take her out of the car seat, out of the stroller, and wear as much as possible, just because it's so great for their head shape, so great for their neck muscles, for their body awareness, and breathing.
Yep, that's so good. And also for connection, for attachment. Connection. You know, yes. All that snuggle with mama and dad. And the, you know, I think that is harder. Harder when you don't live in a city. Like I had my babies in a city and we walked to so many places. So it was so much easier for me to have my big kids in a stroller and my baby attached to me, like in the Mobi wrap. And it is, you have, I think it's harder to be thoughtful or even just to like figure out how to get your baby out of the car seat and keep them asleep so they can sleep in that other position. And it's not for the faint of heart.
It isn't. It isn't. I know with Macy, we were at the hospital so much. I mean, those first few months, the first few years, but those first 6 months, it was so many doctor's appointments. And so it was, yeah, it was just sometimes if we didn't move her too much, then she could stay asleep almost the whole time, you know, but that being able to carry her in and out in a carrier and so much in and out, just like a ton of people poking and prodding and moving around and all that.
Yeah.
It's not for the faint of heart parenting, you guys, but you're doing it. We're all doing it. So everyone here's a rock star. okay. What else, friends?
Okay. What I think we should, let's save the thing we tell ourselves for later so that we can get to the emotional stuff at the end. What do you guys think of what group you would join right away?
Again, I didn't do it perfectly, you guys, but that I was covered. I was in too many groups. Again, Sunny was my first. I'm ambitious. And I actually just had really great, in Orange County, there's just a really great program, ICEC. We reference it a lot. And I had a really awesome regional center person. It was just, the whole thing was super blessed, which I was happy about. So I got plugged in with the perfect group right away. I think that if anything, I would have added, because this didn't happen till Sunny was like 9, 10, 11 months. I would have added just OT as a baby, like infant. So I had a great social group, a great, like mommy and me group. That was amazing. I felt well connected. I felt like I had awesome help from the regional center, an awesome pediatrician, Dr. Sears, love him. And then I would have loved for Sunny to have gotten OT earlier on. That was one thing that I didn't know about. And like, she was gaining weight and she was a good eater, but she wasn't a strong eater. Like, I think I never complained about it because it wasn't an issue, but I wish someone would have noticed how she ate and would have been like, actually that tongue could use some help and that mouth could use help, you know? So I wish we would have started with OT one-on-one as an infant.
Yeah.
When she was a bigger baby.
And that's like, I'm surprised because where I was, that was like, here's what's happening. Your OT's showing up next week and your physical therapist showing up. And it was sort of like, immediately, I didn't know one from another, and they were at my house. But what I'm really grateful for is that because Ace was struggling to gain weight, I was introduced to feeding therapy and oral motor, which oral motor therapy is really the thing that you can skim past. Nobody tells you about it. And it
that's what I think I'm more or less referring to, the oral motor.
Yeah, same.
Because the building of those mouth muscles can affect so much of how they eat and also speak and strength of the tongue. And that's something that I'm really grateful for.
Yeah, we didn't get oral motor. And if I could go back and tell myself anything, it would be this: you need to prioritize this. Because nothing's too late. Our kids are lifelong learners and growers. But my eldest, the lack of oral motor in her early years has greatly affected her as a teenager. And you can't make – the bigger your kids get, the less control you have over making them do things. So it's kind of like when they're littler, you can make them do things. And this sounds terrible because our kids shouldn't be made to do things, but I think everyone knows what I mean. Like you have more say when they're littler. And I feel like with Macy at 14, it's like, hopefully she does this thing, you know? But
well, it's like an exercise, doesn't. Right? Like it would – nobody can make me exercise right now.
You know? Try making me.
So I wish they would. Yeah. I get what you're saying, like not making them, but like it's easy to make that life choice for them of that kind of exercise is going to be what we do every day.
Yeah. So if you have a little one, talk to your regional center or wherever you're at about oral motor therapy, because no one's going to talk to you about it. It's very unlikely that someone's going to say you'll get occupational therapy. And a lot of occupational therapists don't do oral motor. It's not necessarily hand in hand. And this is another episode, but I've also heard in the past there's like controversy around oral motor when it comes, like in the OT world. And maybe OT's listening and like, that's not true at all. But when Macy was real little, not real little, we learned about it when Macy was around 5 or 6 years old. And again, it's not too late, but it sure did feel like, well, shoot, 5 years old feels like we missed a really important boat here.
Yeah. Anyway, and I'll add, oral motor and feeding therapy don't always go hand in hand, but they can. And I'm really grateful for feeding therapy, especially as Ace has gotten older and I've seen how stubborn he is around food. I feel like we slipped in healthy habits early and he has gotten stuck, and he's stuck on his healthy food, and I'm really grateful for it. Yeah. But he has his like 8 things he'll eat. And I just think, dang, if I hadn't had somebody helping me figure out how to get him to eat those, you know, crunchy peppers and cucumbers, like, he might be a kid who will only eat chicken nuggets and that's, you know, it's really hard once they're stuck in a habit.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so true. Oh gosh. Now I don't know what to do. Now I'm feeling overwhelmed because what do I do now? But we're not talking about now. We're talking about then.
That's right. Talking about then.
A group you join. So when Macy was born, DSDN didn't exist, the Down Syndrome Diagnosis Network. And by the time August came along, I felt pretty well established in community. So I didn't learn about the Down Syndrome Diagnosis Network. I think Augie was like 2 or 3 years old, maybe like 2 years old. I haven't known about them for very many years, but I meet parents all the time who are plugged in with their birth group, and it's a great community. But I was like Mercedes. I was a first-time mom, and I had community in my own life, and so we just plugged into that with like friends from church, and I started mom's groups at my house. I had a lot more energy back then to make things happen. But I don't know, because all those groups too that I joined all those years ago, there's some connection, but for the most part, everything's changed so much in 14 years that there's no consistency for what it was back then. It's more like, hey, we haven't seen each other in a decade. How are you? Kind of a thing. Yeah.
Well, I'll say that I was, because Ace was my youngest and I already felt like I had a kid in elementary school. We were like already living our lives and had a mom's group I was part of, all of that stuff. It felt overwhelming to try to find a group. And I really wish I had known about DSDN as well. And I didn't find out about it until probably when we started this podcast, which is when I learned a lot of things. But I felt really alone in San Francisco, and at the beginning tried to find a support group and one didn't exist, and found, you know, by the time we joined like the 1 to 3 year olds little class that existed, there were two other families with Down syndrome, and we all lived like on different sides of the city, 30 minutes from each other. So it was hard to find a way, and the closest support network was 45 minutes outside of the city. I think having something online would have really helped, and what I had was Instagram, and I'm grateful for that, because that's how I found you guys. But that's also why I didn't know anything until I started interviewing all of America. Experts of America.
It is so specific to where you live, because there are, like Mercedes said, ICEC. I was so jealous of that group, and I just didn't, where we are in the Inland Empire, there's just not anything within like a 30-minute drive. And when you're doing life, 30 minutes is too far. It's just too far. I mean, even 15 minutes, depending where you live, feels too far sometimes. But if you have a local Down Syndrome Association, which a lot of cities do, that's a good place to start. And yeah, then your birth group on DSDN, at least you have that online connection. Because it can feel really lonely and overwhelming. And us, join our group called the Lucky Few Podcast Group. We want you here.
Yeah. We love you.
Okay, what question next, friends? We have a handful of ones we can choose from.
How about this one? What is one book you'd recommend for all our readers out there?
Well, it's Slim Pickens. When Macy was born, the only book out of Barnes & Noble was the book Babies with Down Syndrome. Literally, in an entire Barnes & Noble store, if you went to find a book on Down Syndrome, that was it. There were no kids' books.
Yeah.
That were specific or helpful. I don't even know that there was. I can picture myself after learning Macy was coming home, like at Barnes & Noble with that book. And it's a fine one. I think it's been updated many times.
Yes. It came out 2012, I think.
It's fine. And then late, way, way, way later, I read Amy Julia Becker's book. I don't even know if that was out in 2014. Probably around then. Sorry, not 14. Macy was born in 2008. So yeah, it was years later. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that
was years later. What about, did any of you guys read Expecting Adam? Mm-mm. That one came out like in the 90s.
I'm gonna order it right now. Or when we're done.
And it's beautiful. That's the woman who wrote Leaving the Saints.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Leaving the Saints is so good. Martha Beck.
Martha Beck. That's it.
Oh yes. Leaving the Saints is amazing. How have I not read Expecting Adam? This is very surprising.
Yeah. Which has nothing to do with Down syndrome.
She mentions her son with Down syndrome.
But Expecting Adam. Yes, she does. Written, I mean, I think Adam is now in his 30s or 40s, but it's written in the 90s. We should. Yeah.
It didn't come out until 2011.
Didn't they have them on?
It didn't? Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Okay. So maybe I'm just thinking because it took place in the 90s. Mm-hmm. That's probably what I'm thinking. So she was like a student at Harvard getting her doctorate. And finds out in this second pregnancy that her son has Down syndrome, but all these like magical things happen. And it's this really amazing story of her, how challenging that season of her life is pregnant with him, but also like the grace she receives and the feelings she has and kind of the miracles that seem to happen around her during that pregnancy. It's interesting and beautifully done.
I'm going to read that one.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's Heather Avis's The Lucky Few, which is a beautiful story.
Thanks, girl.
Of building a family with children with Down syndrome.
I haven't read it in years, and I was thinking for World Down Syndrome Day month, which we're in, I would do a book club, but I never started it. Like a revisit it. Come read it with
so
me.
Hard.
Because I know that I'm grateful that I wrote it, and I'm so thankful. It came out in 2017, 5 years ago, same when this podcast was born. It came out the same day as our podcast. But I'm so grateful for a year earlier, sorry, 6 years. The book and the ways that it's brought so many people into my life and the messages that I still get from parents. I feel so, so thankful. But I also know that I've changed a lot and came out 6 years ago. I wrote it, 8 years ago or whatever. So thanks. I recommend it to friends.
For me, books. I would say all of the above. I guess I feel like there's two camps, right? Because I feel like our that same book you got, Heather, the Down Syndrome. Is it This Is Down Syndrome book? Or no?
Babies with Down Syndrome.
Babies with Down Syndrome was super helpful because, right, that's more of the medical instructional parenting side. I don't even know of the actual other parenting book out there. Because I feel like there's two different things. Because I love a beautiful story. But if I was looking for parenting advice or like parenting in that whole subject, I would only go to that book because I don't even know if there's another one. Please help us if there's another one.
There are so many good books out now, though. There's a book I just bought, and I'm wrapping up the book I'm reading right now. I've got like 5 pages left.
Yes.
And then I'm starting a book called Entwined. Micah, you had brought up the children's book Entwined about Judith Scott. And her sister wrote a memoir, Sisters and Secrets, and Secrets in the Silent World of Artist Judith Scott.
Yes.
So I'm about to start that, and I cannot wait to read this book. I mean, just go on Amazon or Google or wherever and look up books. There's a lot out there. Bloom's been around for a very long time, Killehampton.
Well, that's what I'm kind of saying. I can think of more like personal stories than I can like a general like parenting a child with Down syndrome book.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that at some point I bought like physical therapy and the physical development in the first 3 years or something like that, that had to do with Down syndrome. And I think that was recommended at a conference I went to. So I know that there are more specifics, like here's what you can do in this particular area to build your child's strength. But I'm glad you mentioned the book about say her name again.
Judith Scott.
And she was, just for our readers to know, she was a woman with Down syndrome who in her later years, like her 40s and 50s, became an amazing artist who used yarn and made these installations using yarn. So this story her sister is written is about their relationship and their story, but also that book that Heather mentioned, Entwined, or I think that's what it's called, right?
Entwined.
Is a picture book about...
Sorry, the picture book is Unbound.
Unbound, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Unbound is the picture book that is about Judith Scott as an artist, and it's really beautiful.
Yeah, and then Entwined is the memoir.
Cool.
Yes. All this to say, friends, there's not a lot out there still. And I think we can get informational books and those are important. I know for me, I wanted to just hear stories. I wanted to read about moms raising kids with Down syndrome. That's what I wanted. I wanted to hear the stories. I wanted to know about the children. I wanted to see myself in it. So if you have a book you want to write, do that. Get a good editor. That's my suggestion. There's other things to do, but make sure you have a good editor and write a book.
Do it.
About Down syndrome, because there aren't that many. There could always be more.
That's right.
100.
Okay. Let's see. What's something that you worried about that you shouldn't have?
Well, speaking of writing a book, I'm doing that right now, and I'm writing the story of Ace and his brothers and our life together. And I was just working on a part yesterday where I was telling the story of a panic attack I had simultaneously with my oldest son, and it was a really hard moment. And as that moment kind of was coming to an end, Ace was too. He kind of breezed past me, pushed open the door to August's room, and climbed on the bed and sat with him until he could come back because I wasn't able to.
Wow.
And I had a sense then in that moment that like the things that I had been most afraid of were less the physical things, the possible diseases, the, you know, all of the things that could go wrong physically. And I don't think I had a sense at the beginning of how much time, you know, it would take in my life to raise him well. And the biggest fears were for his siblings, not necessarily because I thought, you know, it's going to be so hard on them, that I knew that they would love him. But I don't think I knew how much his whole way of being would shape who they became in the most beautiful ways. And I think that my fears that they wouldn't be able to handle him being made fun of, or that it would hurt so much for them to see him be different, or that they would feel this kind of pressure to grow up and be his caregiver. Those things really weren't what I needed to worry about. I think I have seen so much of how tender they have become because of him. Even the one who isn't naturally as tender as the other one, I saw there were people over Friday night at our house, and Ace has the same nasty snotty nose he's had for 3 months, and just won't stop. And I was talking to the people around our table, and August, my 14-year-old, walked by, and I looked up, and he just had a Kleenex in his hand and wiped Ace's nose and kept walking by. And I know, what 14-year-old boys do that? It's the ones who get to grow up like our kids get to grow up. That's amazing.
Oh, that's so beautiful, Micah. I know there are moms listening, parents listening to that, and they're just got tears in their eyes because that's exactly what they needed to hear. It's incredible.
Thanks. What about you guys?
Good. Let's see. I think for me, I wish I would have not worried about taking a break, because Rhodes and Sunflower are 18 months apart. And I was just so worried about having a second child. I feel like this is so common. You have one baby and you think, how can you possibly love another one just as much, you know? And I definitely went through that with Sunflower. And when Rhodes came, I loved him. Obviously, your heart grows bigger, your love grows bigger. But I didn't want to, almost out of like guilt or worry, I didn't want to pause on her therapies. You know, so I would still, with my 18-month-old and brand new baby, go and show up to all her things. And I was like pushing and stretching myself so much. It was such unnecessary stress and like hustle and bustle that I wish I would have just, you know, taken a break. But I didn't want to miss out on that early intervention window. You know, and I think I am happy in some ways that we stuck with it. And I think Sunflower had really great foundation. And I also kind of think it would have been mentally and probably emotionally healthier if I would have just taken a break.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And then she would still maybe be fine.
She'd be fine. Yeah, she'd be fine, right?
With that foundation, you know?
Yeah.
It's like you learn that. I always say this, like, I wish I could have parented Sunflower like I already had a fourth, third or fourth child.
Yeah.
You know, with that know-how and that confidence. But I mean, that's impossible.
Yeah.
You know? Because I was a first time parent. It's hard to parent like a fourth or third time parent or second time parent.
Yeah, that first time parent piece is so real.
It's such a good word, Mercedes, that I mean, I think that's another thing that parents need to hear is that yes, each therapy is important and that time is really formative. But I remember the first summer that we had planned 6 weeks away or something with the boys to go see grandparents on the East Coast. And Chris had that time off for paternity leave and all this stuff. And I remember, and maybe it was the next summer because that feels like Ace was too young then for me to have been worried. But at some point I was leaving for a big chunk of time and him not having therapy. And I had a lot of worries about that. And then we went and swam and played in the sun and he was held and loved and sang songs. And I came back going, what was I so afraid of? He's like physically doing more than he was doing before. And, you know, sometimes the best therapy is being with people who love your kid and letting them, you know, get some exercise in the sunshine. So trust your gut.
Yeah, that's so good.
That's yes,
so good. I was the same as Merce. Macy's my first, but then I did get to raise another kid with Down syndrome with some parenting years under my belt, with August being my third. And it's just so different that when you have your first baby, whenever I meet a mom with their first child and their child has Down syndrome, they're feeling all those feelings of overwhelmed that is most often attached to Down syndrome. I'll say in a very gentle way that I think it's just being a first-time parent. Like what you're feeling is being a first-time parent and you don't, and it's being misdirected to Down syndrome, but you can't separate the two. But that first-time parent, I mean, there's those commercials, like there's whole marketing campaigns based on first-time parents, you know, where it's like the hand sanitizer and the wiping things down and the snacks and the organization and all that. And then second baby comes in and you're like, whatever, to a lot of those things. And it's not like that for a lot of people or for everybody, but for most people parenting it is. And it's parenting's just a lot. And when you're learning how to parent for the first time, you're being stretched so drastically, and that's okay. And then you adjust as each kid comes along. So I think we did so much with Mason. I think with Mace, I would go back and even thinking how I parented August when he first came home. And yeah, I think I would just tell myself to be easier on myself. And then to, I wish that I hadn't worried so much about what my kid was doing compared to other kids. And it's every assessment and that every early start teacher. And it really did take away from me being able to clearly see my kid as good as she was. There was this need to be something more. Like Macy didn't walk until 2 years, 10 months. And it was just, it shouldn't have been so brutal. So what? I wish I could go back and be like, no big deal.
Right.
Just literally is not a big deal. So what? So she's not walking. That's okay. She's amazing. Doesn't add or take away from how amazing she is. I wish I could tell myself
that. Such a hard journey to grow that muscle. You know, it just is. It's just, I mean, to be able to look at your kid and be able to say, hey, all these other kids can do that. And it's okay that mine can't. And it's especially hard when your kid has a disability and you're watching them among their typical peers it's gut-wrenching. And it really is a muscle that has to be built, and it's going to hurt.
And I'll say 14 years in, I'm still exercising that muscle.
Yeah.
I think, too, it was harder for me. The comparison was harder in the Down syndrome community, not outside of it. And that was surprising when I realized that, like, wait, this hurts more in this within the community than outside of it, that comparison piece. Okay, one more. Let's do one more. What was the one that you said was going to make us cry, Micah?
What is one mantra or one thing you'd tell yourself if you could go back to those days?
It's my mantra today. I mean, it's the thing that's unfolded. Who you are as you are is enough and it is good for my kids, for me. It's constant.
I think for me, which I eventually did, if you'd listened before, there was a time where I was like, don't do any therapy, you guys. So, you know, full swing. But in other ways too, just to slow down, which is also hard to do. I brought home Sunflower and Instagram was very much a thing. And I feel like at that time when she was a baby, it wasn't really a big deal because we weren't big. I wasn't on pot. Like there was nothing happening that I was trying to be an advocate or anything like that. And it still keeps you busy, you know, social media, especially if you're a stay-at-home mom. And I just think my mantra then and still now, because my kids are still pretty little, is the remembrance to slow down, reevaluate, and keep slowing down, reevaluate.
That's good. The reevaluating part, I think, is so important. That being like, just because it was the right thing last year doesn't mean it's the right thing this year. And so we'll just look at it again. I think for me, I think there's been a lot of different things I've said to myself over the years, but I think it's kind of come back to like, you don't have to win. For me, I don't have to win. Ace doesn't have to win. My other boys don't have to win. Like, that's not what we're here for, and that's not what the flourishing whole life looks like. It's not about our performance. It's not about the awards we get. And, you know, it's the same thing of comparing our kid with Down syndrome to another kid with Down syndrome. Every single kid is going to reach some milestones while others don't. And sometimes that is going to feel hard. And I think as I get further into like an older age, I see that all of those things that we were worried about in the early days, like have kind of, they like, especially as I have a kid who's nonverbal, like there are things that might not pan out. They might not become there's the stuff where you can be like, yeah, it's okay. They haven't walked yet. They will walk. And sometimes they may not. Like probably our kids with Down syndrome will walk, but there are things that may not happen. And that's not where my worth comes from. Whether or not I am performing as the best of whatever I'm doing, or whether or not Ace is performing in whatever way the world says he should perform, that we don't have to win. We just get to be whole. And that's what we're working towards.
Yes. That'll preach. Put that on a t-shirt. We don't have to win. We just have to be whole. So she said, we don't have to win. Just to be whole.
Yeah, that's what I said.
It's so good. It's that conversation. Yeah, we've talked about this on the podcast that like you get a diagnosis and you head into social media and then it's like, look at everything you can do. And that's the reality. Like, but what if your kid doesn't and can't? You know, like that is okay. That's okay. It's really powerful. Okay, friends. Well, if you are listening to this, obviously you're listening to this, and you're not a new parent, I hope this was helpful, but think of tuck this away. I don't know how you do that. There's surely a way that you can like flag it or bookmark it to pass along to new parents when you learn about them. And we have other episodes too. We have episode 44, which is Shifting the Down Syndrome Narrative with Carissa Carroll from Jack's Baskets. Episode 123, Finding Your People. Episode 138, What Do You Wish You Knew When You Got Your Child's Diagnosis? Episode 151, Finding People That Don't Feel Sorry For You with Joe Lopez. And 177, Happiness is Down Syndrome with Misty Snyder. So all of those talk a lot and highlight the first years and can be helpful episodes for you to listen to now or to pass along to parents with a new diagnosis. Okay, on that note, we're going to move ahead and do some good news. So we'll be right back after we hear from our sponsor.
This episode is sponsored by Able Now Tax Advantage Savings Accounts for Eligible Individuals with Disabilities. Many people still think the old rules apply, that Americans with disabilities can't save for the future if they're receiving disability benefits or if they want to be eligible for benefits in the future. However, Able Now accounts remove these limitations, offering financial peace of mind for millions of eligible individuals in their families. Able Now accounts are the result of a grassroots cross-disability advocacy effort. The idea originated with a group of parents who recognized the inequity of not being able to save money in their child's name for fear of losing essential benefits, such as Medicaid. The Achieving a Better Life Experience Act, better known as the ABLE Act, was passed, opening the door for these tax advantage savings accounts that are specifically designed for people with disabilities. Able Now is available to qualified individuals in all 50 states. Learn if you or someone you know is eligible for an Able Now account at ablenow.com.
Like so many of you listeners, when I first learned that I was going to have a child with Down syndrome, I jumped ahead to their future, like way, way ahead to all of those unknowns, and it becomes incredibly overwhelming. One of the overwhelming tasks before us with our child with Down syndrome was a financial plan. A financial plan for Macy and then eventually August and their futures was incredibly overwhelming. I had heard about something called a special needs trust, but I had no idea what that really meant or where to even start to learn more. So enter Enable. Upon meeting the team there and learning about their services, Josh and I felt a huge weight lifted off of our shoulders to sit down with experts who have created a proven process, and they offer one-on-one guidance was exactly what we needed to create a plan for the future for actually the whole family. I cannot recommend Enable more. Please go right now and check out enablesnp.com. That's enablesnp as in special needs planning.com. All right, friends, before we head out, though.
It's time for good news. Do I sound like Truly?
100%. I was like, wait, is True in the room?
I've been working really hard. Is that Truly? Everybody, welcome to the good news. Yeah.
Time for good news. Time for good news. Everybody, welcome to the good news. Yeah.
Thanks, so True. Right, thanks for the lessons. You don't have to win. I don't have to win.
I have a good news from this morning. August has a green jacket. This is not the good news. The green jacket, puffer jacket that he's now obsessed with. You know how people have those stories of their kid is obsessed with like the red boots or the whatever. They want to wear it every day, all the time. And it's darling, except not 365 days a year. I'm being dramatic about it because I want him to stop wearing this green jacket. However, this morning I'm in my room and he's standing in the doorway and he was coming in to ask me to help him zip it. And then I hear a zip and he zipped his jacket. Like the bottom hooked the whole freaking thing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah. August, you Egyptian jacket. Oh my gosh. He was less impressed. I think he's like, yeah, mom. I'm like, that was amazing. Anyway. There you go.
Yes.
Go, Augie.
Just zipping jackets. Go, Augie.
Just zipping jackets.
Oh, I love it. I have one. The speech therapist has been pushing and encouraging me and Chris to anytime Ace like makes a sound in response to what we're saying to him, to accept it as the appropriate response. And so, you know, if he says, after I say hi, I speak to him like he just said hi back to me. So we're giving him medicine for this cold he's had on Saturday morning, and he's really mad, and he yells, nah, wah, wah. And he said, yes. No, mama. And he never makes the wah sound. And I was so excited that I didn't give him any medicine. I was like, we're skipping it because you said.
Oh my gosh, it's so good. I mean, so stressful and so good.
I'm like, okay, like, well, how long are we going to do that? Like, what's going to happen today? But I can see that coming up.
That's such good news. Yeah, good news.
I love that. Sunflower has these two friends. They're sisters. They're absolutely wonderful, who are like sincere, true friends. And their mom asked me this semester if we could carpool. And I was so giddy about it because it's just been such a highlight and game changer for Sunflower to arrive to her little classes with her besties, with her friends, her two pals. It's just a sweet, you know, all those moments of connection, right, Heather? It's just,
yes,
it feels good.
Yes, it's so sweet. That is wonderful. Good news. I love that. Okay, we're going to wrap this one up, everybody. I hope that you guys enjoyed this episode. It's fun to think back to those beginning days and moments with our little babies. I'd give anything to have that back. Oh my gosh. But until then, thanks for listening, and thanks Josh Davis for editing the episode, and Val Schleter and Ashley Frakolosi for producing it.
If you like this episode, share it with family and friends, and don't forget to subscribe.
And head over to theluckyfewpodcast.com for show notes and links to all those other episodes that we mentioned, and the organizations or books that we mentioned will include there as well. And make sure you're following us on social media at The Lucky Few Pod.
And hey, listener, you're slaying it. We love you. We're cheering you on, and we can't wait to be together again next week. See you later.
Bye.